This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today in Washington, where the House of Representatives expects to vote today on a bill that would suspend the debt ceiling until 2025. Now, the bill narrowly escaped the House Rules Committee yesterday, where Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern joined three other Democrats and two Republicans in voting against allowing it to get to the floor. President Biden, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy brokered this deal, and now Minority Whip Catherine Clark of Massachusetts is drumming up Democratic support for it to offset Republicans who are defecting over the deal. The U.S. could run out of money and potentially crash global markets if this bill doesn't pass Congress by June 5th. Jake Auchincloss of Massachusetts' 4th Congressional District is warning representatives on both sides of the aisle not to bank on someone else voting yes so they can vote no and maintain ideological purity. Congressman Auchincloss joins us on the line from Washington. Congressman, welcome back.
Always good to be with you.
So I understand you just left a closed-door meeting with the House Democratic Caucus. I understand they're holding a press conference essentially now. What did you hear in that meeting, Congressman?
Well, first of all, I'm confident this is going to pass the House and then the Senate and make its way to the president's desk. The United States is not going to default on its debt. But the brinksmanship that went into this reveals deeper dysfunction that already is damaging U.S. full faith and credit. I mean, we saw that Microsoft's securities were trading at a lower premium than U.S. treasuries. That's embarrassing, frankly, for the U.S. government. And it's already undercut some of the great work that President Biden has done in the last 2 years to build relationships and trust overseas. People want to be able to count on the United States, and that means counting on the United States dollar. So I leave the caucus confident that we're going to pass the bill, but frustrated also that it's gotten to this point.
So I want to stay on the confident piece for a minute. We had questions from our texting group, and you can join it out there by sending the word Boston to 617-766-0382 about that confidence. Matt and Beverly saying, do you believe that Republicans would actually let the U.S. default if they didn't receive concessions from President Biden? You sound pretty confident. So why? What makes you so sure this is going to get over the hurdle?
Because Democrats are going to provide the votes necessary. I joined Congress 2.5 years ago. January 6, 2021 was my second day in office. And I watched as a big crew of House Republicans incited an insurrection. And then Democrats had to deliver the votes to secure a free and fair election and the peaceful transfer of power, the hallmark of our constitutional democracy. And now in my second term, I'm watching again as extreme Republicans are willing to tank the full faith and credit of the United States, which is not just some slogan. That's people's retirement accounts. That's jobs. That's U.S. geoeconomic standing. Willing to tank it so that they can, what, gut the IRS to allow the wealthiest among us to evade taxes, to eliminate 200,000 Head Start seats for young children. I mean, these are the things that they were making their top priorities at the start of negotiations with the president. So I'm frustrated, frankly, that we're having to be the grownups in the room, but I'm also confident that we will be, and we were not going to default.
So I want to stay with this a second longer, Congressman. I am intrigued by the role that Massachusetts Democrats are playing in this, mindful that Catherine Clark, as Minority Whip, is pulling together votes, also mindful that, for example, the head of the Progressive Caucus has said that she's not going to vote yes. How many Democrat votes is it going to take to put this over the top? How many of your colleagues do you expect are going to say yes?
I don't know. Speaker McCarthy has talked about getting 140, 150 Republicans. You need 218 to pass the bill. So we'll have that. I'm confident there will be at least that and probably many more. What I would encourage people to watch is actually the rule. So this legislation gets approved really in a two-step process. There's first the rule, and then there's the actual legislation itself. And House process is that the rule is the responsibility of the majority party. A rule is passed with the speaker's party voting for it. It's what gives the speaker the authority to bring that legislation to the floor. And it's very unusual for a speaker to have to ask the minority leader for help on the rule itself. That looks likely to happen. And if it does happen, Democrats should stay united behind Hakeem Jeffries, who's the minority leader, to ensure that we can get some concessions that reflect Democratic values and priorities.
Such as?
Well, I'm going to let Hakeem negotiate in private. I'm not going to negotiate in public. But it's going to be things that extracts as much as he can to advance some of the good work that we did last Congress, where we invested in infrastructure, where we lowered healthcare prices, where we invested in domestic manufacturing, where we shored up our democracy. I've got confidence that Hakeem is going to be able to drive a bargain if necessary.
We're speaking with Massachusetts Congressman Jake Auchincloss of the 4th District as we all watch the House expected to vote today on this suspension of the debt ceiling. There are some other things in this package, right? The going in positions, Republicans saying cut, 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 cut. The president saying, I don't want to talk about anything other than raising the debt ceiling. Here we are with some things in the package. There are two pieces I want to ask you about. First, defense spending. Full funding for veteran health care is envisioned in Biden's 2024 budget. No cuts to defense spending in this Biden-McCarthy deal. You served in the Marine Corps. We've talked with you about that in the past. John in Upton wrote, considering our bloated defense budget at over $800 billion has been spared, isn't it time for a forensic financial analysis to validate its expenditures? I believe in a strong military, but I'm extremely skeptical that we need this much funding. So your response to how defense came out in this and to people like John, who say, is that the thing that should have been kept whole?
I agree with John in his skepticism of the Pentagon's prudence, let's call it. And indeed, I've voted against the military budget in my time in Congress, not because I'm not a strong believer in a effective military, which I am. And we do need a growing presence in the Indo-Pacific, but because, frankly, the Pentagon has never passed an audit. They are bad at procurement. They are a 30-layered bureaucracy that is got a bad tooth-to-tail ratio, and they need to get their procurement house in order.
Wait, what is a tooth-to-tail ratio?
A tooth-to-tail ratio is basically the concept of how many rear echelon admin personnel does it take to support a frontline warfighter?
I see.
And you want to keep that at like a 2-to-1, 3-to-1, 4-to-1 ratio. These days, goodness knows, that's probably 10-to-1, 50-to-1. So absolutely, we need to be asking the Pentagon to spend smarter, not bigger. But this is a compromise that is produced by a divided government. The Republicans are absolutely focused on increasing defense spending. And indeed, the president in his own budget advocated for increasing defense spending. And an agreement that keeps defense spending basically in line with inflation, I think, was always going to be a pillar of a compromise.
So the other piece that I want to touch on, Republicans were pushing heavily on work requirements for those who receive public assistance. There were some changes on two fronts, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Most people know it as food stamps, and TANF, or Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And the big change, work requirements for people between ages 50 and 54. This is where we come back to Massachusetts again. Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern, who's on the Rules Committee. I know you know he's a strong anti-hunger advocate. He voted against even letting this to the floor yesterday. I want to play a little sound from him from C-SPAN. Here we go.
We have some of the wealthiest corporations on the entire planet that pay little to no taxes. Instead, we have to cut funding that helps the most vulnerable in our country. Give me a break. Now, I appreciate the Biden administration secured provisions to expand benefits to help some hungry people. But improving benefits for some does not justify putting 700,000 older adults at risk of losing critical life-saving food benefits.
And one of our listeners, James in Gloucester, asked us to ask you, can he explain in simple terms how the deal on the table will affect SNAP benefits? I'm a social worker, and many of my clients receive SNAP, and I'm worried about how the changes in the deal will affect them.
So I can, and basically what this does is for individuals between the ages of 49 and 54, it tightens work requirements to be able to access food stamps. Now, on the other side of that ledger, it also significantly relaxes requirements for three categories of individuals, for foster children up to the age of 24, for veterans, and for people experiencing homelessness, which is pretty broadly defined in the agreement. And actually on net, the number of people who will have access to SNAP benefits will likely expand. And that is that's an assessment issued by the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan group of experts. So I'm not sure the GOP actually expected that. I think that's an example of Shalonda Young, the director of Office of Management and Budget, probably getting the better of her counterparties. But I want to zoom out from the weeds here for a second and really just talk about the values that are at play here, because I think it's important. The federal budget, $4.5 trillion, was largely off the table in this debate. We really were talking about non-defense discretionary spending, which is a very small portion of the federal budget. And what the Republicans are purporting to do is put us on a path of fiscal prudence by cutting food benefits for people who are food insecure. And that is just a nonsensical way to achieve a balanced budget. There's just not enough money in that program, regardless of whether you are for or against it. The money just isn't there. Meanwhile, the Republicans also wanted to cut funding for the IRS, which is one of the best and easiest things you can do to increase revenues. Every dollar into the IRS is $5 to $10 out in terms of enhanced enforcement. Not of everyday Americans, but of the wealthiest Americans and corporations who oftentimes have an army of tax accountants who are trying to evade what they owe. So it really just kind of puts into question how serious my colleagues on the other side of the aisle really are about fiscal prudence when they think that, oh, we're going to get to a place of spending probity by making sure that this minuscule part of the federal budget is somehow trimmed.
In the end, there is some trimming. This will be a compromise. You've expressed confidence that it will pass. You've nevertheless, in our last minute, expressed concern that there would damage to our reputation, especially our competitive reputation with countries like China, has been done. Let's say it passes. Do you remain concerned that the country's been weakened?
I do. I do remain concerned. The Chinese Communist Party has an overarching narrative of a United States specifically and the West broadly in decline and dysfunction. And I disagree with that narrative. I'm an optimist. I think that we can make this the American century. But January 6, 2021 feeds into that narrative about a democracy in decline. A potential debt default feeds into that narrative about an economy in decline. And the things that we can do to ensure that we outcompete the CCP on the world stage are largely about how we govern ourselves.
Sorry to interrupt. I was just clarifying CCP is Chinese Communist Party. Sorry, go.
That's right. Yes. And so I do remain concerned, but I also have confidence that ultimately we can outcompete both on values and strategically.
All right. Massachusetts Congressman Jake Auchincloss is in Washington, D.C. He represents the 4th Congressional District in the House. The vote may happen today. We are going to keep watching. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.